The gospel for today comes from the gospel according to St. Mark. It is a depiction of the transfiguration. Hear then the word of the Lord. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly, when they looked around, they saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, he ordered them to tell no one about what they had seen until after the Son of Man had risen from the dead. This is for us the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, for those who pay attention to such things, it is almost Academy Awards season. So in honor of the Academy Awards, I thought I would this morning imagine the soundtrack that is to accompany the movie Transfiguration. Now, I know that the Academy only awards Oscars for the best original song. But since I am the executive producer of this sermon, I get to decide what music I'm going to put in the soundtrack, and I'm going to go with well-known hits. And so, if you want, I will invite you to sing along at various points. We will continue the hymn sing that I so rudely interrupted this morning. I mean, for instance, as the film opens, the camera picks up Jesus as he and Peter and James and John begin to climb an arid, windswept mountain. And as they make that climb, I want us to play Rocky Mountain High. He climbed cathedral mountains, he saw silver clouds below, John Denver sings as the camera zooms in on Jesus and then fades to a flashback. In quick succession, we see a famished Jesus refuse the devil's offer of bread. Then Jesus, surveying all the kingdoms of the world, as Denver sings, he saw everything as far as you can see. Before we watch Jesus high atop the temple pinnacle in Jerusalem, contemplating a great fall, as Denver sings, and they say that he got crazy once and tried to touch the sun, and he lost a friend, but he kept the memory. Perhaps it was the memory of that demonic encounter that played through Jesus' mind as he and his disciples made their way up the mountainside. And when at last the little group had reached the summit, Jesus is transfigured before them. His very form changes. His appearance begins to glow. His clothes become dazzling white. Now, I confess that I'm a little at a loss as to know what to play here. After all, there hadn't been a scene like this one since Moses had stood atop the mountain to receive the law of God, and there, standing in the very presence of God, Moses' face shone like the sun. The scene wants something musically that's dramatic but not heavy, something luminous without being evanescent. Maybe here, maybe something by Johann Sebastian Bach, especially as he is played by Simona Dinnerstein, who once said that when her own teacher played Bach, you could hear light coming through the sound. That's what Peter and James and John heard that day, light coming through the sound. It was the same light that had illuminated the mountain when Moses received the law. It was the same light that had inflamed the mountain when Elijah battled 450 false prophets and God had consumed his altar in fire. Both men had seen it raining fire in the sky, and both had talked with God and listened for God's non-casual reply. And speaking of voices, it is the voices of Moses and Elijah that we hear next, telling about the good old days, at least as the Judds sing about them, where the line between right and wrong didn't seem so hazy, when a promise really was something people kept, not just something they would say, when families really bowed their heads to pray and daddies really never went away. Moses and Elijah represent the law and the prophets. They were men who were uncompromising in their obedience to God and uncompromising in their call for Israel to be obedient to God. But they weren't strictly disciplinarians. They weren't only disciplinarians. Their insistence on obeying God was motivated by a love for God's people. As Matt Skinner explains, both prophets, like Jesus, labored to help the people of God remain faithful as they were enticed by idolatrous religious ideas. All of them, Moses, Elijah, Jesus, sought to keep the people of God faithful and hopeful as they suffered the burdens of an oppressive political system. So maybe Jesus and Moses and Elijah weren't talking so much about the good old days as much as they were talking about the days to come, when Jesus' own love would be put to the test, when he would submit to death and be raised from the dead by the power of God. And as these three men were talking, Jesus and Moses and Elijah, Simon Peter started singing, "If I could save time in a bottle, the first thing that I'd like to do is to save every day till eternity passes away just to spend them with you." It's a silly sort of song, I guess, full of romantic notions, but it was what was on Peter's heart. The moment was perfect. Here he was with his closest friends, his teacher and master. They were alone by themselves in a beautiful, secluded place. They were getting to listen in as Jesus talked with two of the greatest figures in Israel's history. They were just sharing a moment, that perfect Kodak moment. So perfect, in fact, that Peter wanted to capture it. I'm going to build three shelters, Rabbi, Peter said, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah. It was clear that he still had stars in his eyes. He'd just watched as Jesus had fed a crowd of 4,000 people with seven loaves of bread and a few little fish. And shortly after that, Peter had watched as Jesus restored the sight to the eyes of a blind man. When Jesus had asked his disciples who he was, it was Peter who answered correctly, "You are the Messiah. You are the Son of God. You are the fulfillment of God's promise to redeem Israel." In Peter's mind, Jesus plus Messiah equaled glory and power and dominion. It meant that he would finally arrive and he would share with Jesus in governing the world. "If I could make days last forever," Peter sang, "if words could make wishes come true, I'd save every day like a treasure, and then again, I would spend them with you." He wasn't sure what else to sing because deep down he was really afraid. Even though he'd got the answer right about who Jesus was, Jesus didn't talk about power and glory and dominion. Instead, Jesus had talked about how the Son of Man must suffer and be killed, and on the third day rise again. And none of that made sense to Peter. Better to capture the moment, this glorious, luminous moment, than have to face what Jesus said was surely coming. And just then, a cloud overshadowed the whole group. And from the cloud, there came a voice from heaven saying, "This is my Son, whom I love. Listen to him." And suddenly, James, who up to this point in the movie hasn't been heard, sang, "Such a feeling's coming over me. There is wonder in most everything I see." His brother John joined in, "Not a cloud in the sky. Got the sun in my eyes, and I won't be surprised if it's a dream." There, up on the mountain, Jesus transfigured before them, Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. It was a revelation. It was an unveiling. It was an epiphany. It was a moment in time when suddenly everything was clear. Everything was as it ought to be. Everything was good and right and perfect. God was at last working in God's world again to bring about all of God's promises. "Everything I want the world to be," Peter sang, "is now coming true, especially for me. And the reason is clear. It's because you are here. You're the nearest thing to heaven that I've seen." And that was true. For in Jesus, Peter and all the world could see heaven and the world as it was meant to be. Finally, it is Jesus' turn to break into song. "I'm on the top of the world," Jesus sings, "looking down on creation, and the only explanation I can find is the love I've found ever since you've been around. Your love has put me at the top of the world." And that was true, too. For God's love from the very beginning had put Jesus at the top of the world. Jesus, according to the letter to the Colossians, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation, for in him all things in heaven and on earth, things visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or powers, those things that Peter quite rightly said belong to Jesus, all things have been created through him and for him, just because he is the Son of God, whom God loves, in whom God takes delight. "Something in the wind has learned my name," Jesus went on to sing, "and it's telling me that things are not the same. In the leaves, in the trees, and the touch of the breeze, there's a wistful sense of coming death for me." Suddenly, this happy song, this jaunty love song, modulates into a minor key. For Jesus understood that soon this love would be put to the ultimate test. Jesus would go from the top of the world looking down on creation to its very bottom, descending through betrayal and arrest, down into trial and torture and ultimately death. But even so, today was a good day, a glorious day. A mountaintop experience, a day to be on top of the world. For everything and everyone there pointed to the reality that God was indeed at work in God's world. God was at work bringing about the fulfillment of God's promises to redeem Israel, and not Israel alone, but all the earth. The transfiguration was a clear sign that something major was about to happen. It was a good day, a glorious day. And then, when the cloud was gone, when the glory had faded, the little group of Jesus' disciples followed him down the mountain. And as they walked, they sang, "Jesus walked this lonesome valley. He had to walk it by himself. Oh, nobody else could walk it for him. He had to walk it by himself. And he would walk through the valley of the shadow of death. He had to. He had to walk it by himself for us and for our salvation, so that we might have life. And when he had walked through that lonesome valley, God raised him to life again and placed him on top of the world."